Hello and welcome to episode 67 of Tabletop Dame Talk, a show where we talk about tabletop games of all types. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Kitty.
Today we're calling an Audible and talking about Audibles. Maybe Chris has been watching too much football, or maybe we've already recovered the subject we announced last week. Either way, he's spinning it, and today we're talking about last-minute changes to plans within the game. But first, a thank you to our Patreon friends of the show, Emil Giljam, George Deere, and Adam Harrison. And thank you to our newest patron, Michael Yanikowski. And a huge thank you to all of our other patrons as well.
Wow, you did that name good.
Yeah, not too bad. I practiced a little bit beforehand in my head.
Practice the name, not the intro.
No. Yeah. Never the intro. We want people to know that this is taped live to tape. So.
Every single time. Yes. Welcome to Tabletop Game Talk, if you haven't been here before. This is our episode after Thanksgiving. How was your guys' Thanksgiving?
Very nice.
Awesome.
I deep fried a turkey.
Yeah, I saw the pictures, and I only just discovered that people even do that.
Like, what?
I didn't even know that was a thing. I don't think it's really done in the UK that much.
I was going to say, sometimes you say things, and I'm just like, yep, you're definitely not from America.
Yeah.
It's a very American thing to do, I think.
It just sounds horrifically unhealthy. I mean, I'm sure it's delicious, but I don't know.
I was looking, and I think it's actually healthier than when you baste it and like inject butter and all that like stuff you put in a baked turkey to keep it moist.
How is that possible? It's like submerged in the oil.
Yeah, but the oil immediately crisps the outside and then it just cooks the inside in its own juices. It's like super juicy and super tasty.
The oil does not get all the way through. Whereas so the way my mom makes a turkey is you put butter on every single surface and like in between the skin and the meat. Yeah. In that case, the butter just bakes into the meat. Because here's the thing about turkeys. They're not actually good to eat.
No.
They're really dry.
Yeah.
Everyone spends so much work making them taste good for Thanksgiving because they don't just taste good.
But if you deep fry them, they're delicious.
Or cover them in butter.
Or gravy. Or whatever. But if you're not from America, you don't care about anything we're talking about. If you are, then you've already had your turkey and you don't care either. So let's talk about something people care about. And that is, this kind of snuck up on me because we're giving away two copies of Pandemic Legacy 2. And the first one we're giving away today.
You're insane. I can't believe how generous you are. That's an insane giveaway.
Well, I had three copies. I had to give away at least two.
Yeah, but you bought them specifically.
What happened in November? This snuck up on me too.
Yeah, it's
gone. Just gone.
What is the date? Like the 28th as you listen to it?
Yeah, the 28th as you listen. Correct. Yep. Today's the 27th.
Yeah, November's gone.
So
I did the drawing as usual before we do the show because I just put it in a spreadsheet and then there's some calculation and a random number pops up and then one of the little lines says winner. And this month's winner is Christy Keel.
Christy, yay!
Wow, Christy won. Wow.
Long-time listener, Christy.
Yes. So we actually played Pandemic
Iberia
with her at Origins. Mm-hmm. So now she's going to play Pandemic Legacy Season 2 along with us because after this recording, we are going to play our first game of Pandemic Legacy.
And do you know what you just reminded me I'm most looking forward to? You getting all the country names wrong when you said like. It's like Chris comes up with some Kanishiwa instead of Kinshasa as one of his good ones. I mean, almost every place has a different name.
It's a legacy game. You get to make it what you want it to
no,
be.
No, I love it. I love it. It's honestly one of the best bits.
I opened it up. It's been at my house. I looked at it.
Ooh.
I opened the saran wrap only. I didn't look at any of the like spoilers.
Of course
I just
not.
Looked at what I'm supposed to look at. I'm pretty excited. But also there are not a lot of city names for Chris to mess up yet.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. Apparently the world is revealed as you discover it.
Yeah. It looks so cool.
Oh my God.
So I'm really looking forward to it. If you are not Christy Keel and did not win today, you still have an opportunity to win. If you're a patron, you're automatically entered. If you're not a patron, then email us with November/December giveaway as the subject. You can probably just say December giveaway as the subject if you want. Send it to me by the 17th. We will announce it on the 19th, and I will try to have it in the mail to you so you have it before Christmas. So during that weekend, you can play it for the weekend for Christmas. That is Pandemic Legacy Season 2. Kickstarters. I backed two of them. So I'm going to first talk about one that is no longer, that's already ended, and that is Root. It's a game of woodland might and right. And the reason I want to bring this up, because I was looking at it, this game, I'll read their description of it. Root is the next step in our development of asymmetric design, like in Vast. So this is by the same developers of Vast, if you're familiar with that. Each player in Root has a unique capabilities and a different victory condition. Now, with the aid of gorgeous multi-use cards, a truly asymmetric design has never been more accessible. So I wasn't actually going to back this one because it has, the art style is not totally in my line, but like a lot of things, other people look at it and say, hey, that's cool, did you get it? And I say, oh, well, if you think it's cool, I should get it. And in this case, Sydney actually like texted me. It's like, hey, did you back Root? Because I'm thinking about getting it on Kickstarter. And I'm like, oh, well, here, let me just go get that real quick. So Root is the name. I don't know if they're going to do a post-campaign. They might. But Vast, which is the Crystal Caverns, was another very asymmetric game. Like, very different play styles depending on what place you're playing. I think in Vast you can actually play a cave, and so the cave can win the game by like smothering all the people that are in it. So there's a lot of different things that you can do here, and this is their next iteration of the game, so it looks really cool. And once I read more about it, I'm like, okay, yeah, I should probably back this. So that one you'll have to take a look at the pledge manager, see what if they're gonna have a pledge manager for that. But the other one I backed was Core Space. This one is a sci-fi miniature skirmish game with fully modular 3D terrain. This one has a little less than 3 weeks left. This one looks pretty cool to me. Like, it actually, when you build the board, you put out this map, which are kind of like square tiles, but then you put terrain, like 3D terrain on top of it, and combined you create this board, and then you run through different scenarios with it. I'm fairly certain this one is not co-op, it's a competitive game, but there are co-op scenarios and stuff. So it's a skirmish game, which basically means you set up a scenario and then you attempt to complete that scenario. It looks super, super cool. It's not the cheapest game out there, and there's only one pledge level. I think it's a UK game since it's in pounds.
Oh, yeah, that would be
nice. What gave you that idea, Chris?
But translated into dollars, it's about $110, $112. But it looks really, really cool. They have a lot of point of view pictures of like painted miniatures in the halls, so it gives you this like really cool immersive.
Oh, I can see that. Yeah, it looks cool.
Yeah, so it's like it's one of those things where just the pictures alone make me say, all right, I must buy it. And we had a good question, which we'll get to in our quick questions, about this kind of game, so I figured it's also thematic for what we're doing, so it works for me just fine. Let's see what else. No more Kickstarters. But we do have a little bit of feedback. So, Josh, why don't you take us into that?
Indeed. Well, let's get some feedback about past episodes. And if you have feedback about this or any of our previous episodes, email us or go to our Board Game Geek forums, easily found at tabletopgametalk.com/BGG. The first one's from Steve. Yes, I know I'm really late on this one, but Kitty mentioned way back on episode 10 that someone should make a game out of chocolate. I just wanted to pass along that they are making a chocolate edition of Catan, and it is exactly what it sounds like. I'm sure it will not be good chocolate, but nonetheless, Kitty called it.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to the chocolate version of Catan. I just mentioned Thanksgiving, and one of the people that came over brought Sydney and I a housewarming gift, which is a chocolate version of Battleship.
Wow.
Do you win these games by eating your opponent's pieces?
Yes, you do.
I knew it.
Now, this Battleship one, you won't find it as Battleship because apparently it's not Milton Bradley or whoever does Battleship that has decided to make the game, although I think they're missing a huge opportunity. It's actually called Chocolate Warship Game or Chocolate Warship Board Game. And it is ounces of chocolate.
That's hilarious.
Basically, it works just like Battleship. There's a fold-out board in there.
You're going to have to tell us if the chocolate was any good.
Maybe I'll bring it. So, spoiler alert. It's not really a spoiler alert. It's just I'm trying to remind myself, and because last month was all super crazy. And it kind of led into this month being all super crazy because there was a convention, then a wedding, then Thanksgiving. Sydney and I are on Friday going to get on a plane to go on another cruise.
Oh, yeah. We should talk about this because this is Dice Tower Con, right?
It is Dice Tower Con. Dice Tower Cruise.
Sorry. Because they also have a con.
They also have a con. Yeah. God, those guys. And
they got their fingers everywhere.
I'm kind of curious. Like, how is this going to be different to normal conventions? Like, how do you think it's going to differ? I know you haven't been
On a ship. That's the big one. Well, I mean,
is it smaller attendance? Like,
there's about, they say there's 600 adults and about 230 kids that will be there just for Dice Tower Cruise. Right. The ship is about the same, a little bit smaller than the ship that we went on for the wedding. So maybe
that means nothing to me.
There'll be probably about a total of 3,000 guests, and about 900 of them will be there for Dice Tower Con or Dice Tower Cruise. They're going to take the dining hall where people eat dinner, and it's not feeding people dinner, that'll be like the open gaming areas.
Oh, nice.
So there'll be a ton of people on the ship just for this cruise.
Wow.
But yeah, it's so, but neither of us can wrap our heads around the fact that we're going again. Like, it doesn't seem real. It doesn't seem like it's going to happen, but like, everything's booked. Everything's good. We just have to get on a plane on Friday and
it's almost like you're just not going to experience winter at all. I mean, it hasn't even, doesn't feel like it's arrived, and there you're off back to the Caribbean or wherever it is you're going.
Exactly. But to take it back to board game chocolate battle warships, not battleship. we're probably going to bring this on the cruise with us because that'll be fun to play.
Perfect.
So anyway, Steve continues.
He does. Also, you talked about integrating VR with board games, and I don't think that that's going to catch on. But augmented reality, I think, will. I heard of some guys that are developing an AR version of tabletop war game, where the units move and shoot in the screen of your phone. Also, here is my rant on VR versus AR. With AR, people do not need a taped-off area to play their VR game in. They can just get a table and use their phones as the viewer to the enhanced world. VR people are only going to do that in a space that they feel very safe in, where AR can be used anywhere.
And I completely agree with Steve. VR is very much like you have to just trust all the space you're in.
Up until we get to like Ready Player One level, like multi-directional treadmills and whatever suits that you live in.
Yep. Strap you in so that you're actually contained and you can move wherever you want. You don't have to worry about moving in the room.
That's true. Okay, I'll give you that. That's, I mean, like, because most of the time it's going to be your living room, right? If it's really going to be mainstream, it's got to be in your living room. And like, you know, people's living rooms have stuff in it. And it's like, you know, if it's kids playing it, there's going to be, you know, vases and things the parents don't want breaking. And it's a tough one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Dogs that can trip you. And
yeah.
That's the biggest one, is the dogs that can trip you. Because you can tape off a room and you literally put tape on the floor and then you train the VR to say, okay, here's the wall. Right. So as you walk closer to that, you'll see in the screen, it's like, oh, you're approaching the wall. Don't step outside that.
But you know, the cats that love to twist themselves inside your feet, they get in that room and, you know, doesn't matter. You're not going to see them in VR.
Yep. I
unless
do that
you
even
get them little cat VR suits.
Oh, yeah. Or like a little dot. Like, it just could be a little GPS dot or something that they just like, as soon as they get near you.
we could definitely do that. Okay. Well, we have another email.
All right. Well, this is actually from Michael on Board Game Geek.
Oh, yeah.
He says, I love the idea of a couch to 5K for board games and thought I'd submit my own list for it. This is my idea of going from gateway into mid-level games. So he actually gives really good descriptions for each of these games. I'm just going to read his list. If you are interested in why he thinks these things, you should go check it out on Board Game Geek,
which is at tabletopgametalk.com/BGG.
All right. So number one, Zombie Dice. Number two, Love Letter. Number three, Flux. Number four, Forbidden Island. Number five, Sheriff of Nottingham. Number six, Tokaido.
Yep.
All right. Number seven, Star Realms. Number eight, Colony. Number nine, Get Rich Quick. And number 10, Sentinels of the Multiverse.
Yeah, I like this list. Like, Zombie Dice is super, super simple. It's just you're rolling dice and there's the simple rules of you're just trying to get all the zombies out from in front of you. Love Letter, I think we've talked about Love Letter before. That one's another very casual, easy to learn game. We actually did it as a huge tournament on for our wedding that everyone just immediately took to and enjoyed playing. Flux, we've talked about Flux before. Again, super easy. Draw one, play one. Rules change as you go. Forbidden Island starts getting into the co-op thing. Sheriff of Nottingham starts getting into the kind of bluffing social types of games. Tokaido, I have not played this, but it's more of a, I think it's a card strategy. What does he say here?
Yep.
Yep. Not being too stressful. Star Realms, I like this one. It might be a kind of a big jump. And I have know nothing about Colony.
He does put in the Star Realms that he wanted to put Harry Potter Hogwarts Battle here, but it feels like stretches on too long for the list. I actually really think that that's a fun game to get people in because they're so engaged in the IP and you don't have to actually play that much of it.
Yeah. And if you've gotten them through Tokaido at this point, they're more open-minded. So actually this may be either one of those could probably work. Mm-hmm. Colony, I've not played it. Get Rich Quick, I've not played, but it sounds good. And then Sentinels of the Multiverse, only if someone's going to run it, because that one is intense as far as like playing.
Well, it is 10 on the list.
That's yes, like it is 10th on the list.
You graduated them to the 5K by that point.
He does say that by now I have expected to have lost over half the original 8 I started with and probably finished with 3 new gamers eager to start their own collection.
Yep.
So nice.
I like it. I like it quite a bit.
It makes me want to put together my Couch to 5K game list.
We should. Maybe that should be our next episode. you know something? That's not going to be next episode, but it's going to be the following
coming
episode.
Soon.
Yep. The Couch to 5K. All right.
All right. So let's go to a question from one of our listeners. This is a question that won't fill an entire episode topic, but we think is interesting nonetheless. Today's question comes from Miles. Oh, he actually has a few questions and comments. So we'll start with one. How do you classify a miniature game versus a board game with miniatures?
So this one is interesting. Do you guys have like a feel on this? What?
A little bit. I mean, it's just kind of like I know Warhammer 40,000 is definitely miniatures.
Yep.
And I think that something like Arcadia Quest is definitely just a game with miniatures.
I would agree with that. Kitty, do you have like... Because you guys are the ones, I don't know that you guys have ever played a true tabletop miniatures game.
I played it for about half an hour, and me and the kid that I was playing with against when I was about 14 were like, got into a huge argument. We're like, this isn't a good idea.
I have never played what I would consider a true miniature game. I don't think I have any interest in it based on what I have seen, watched, experienced other people playing them personally. But
I was just getting in arguments over like how far they had measured. Like that is 6.5 inches, not 6 inches. I think I was just too competitive and young at the time.
Well, I think maybe it's one of those things where like you know a miniatures game when you see it.
I was going to say it's a little bit like the definition of porn.
Yeah, exactly.
You know it when you see it.
You know it when you see it. So if you have to put kind of structure around it. If it doesn't have a board, then it's but it does have miniatures and it has you're measuring with whether it be preset distances or rulers. So like X-Wing is a miniatures game. It doesn't have a board, but it has preset measurement tools. So you know you can move 1, 2, or 3 of these little spaces. That's definitely a miniatures game. Something that has a board like Arcadia Quest, which has a lot of miniatures and a lot of moving around, I would still consider that a board game. However, you can find a lot of middle ground stuff. Battletech, for example, plays on a hex grid. So there is no measurement, but it is absolutely, in my mind, a miniatures game. It's not a board game. And also, Battletech can even be a role-playing game, depending on how you go. So I would say just because board games have a lot of miniatures, and even if they're moving space to space, I wouldn't necessarily consider them miniatures games unless the main goal is essentially tactics of destroying your opponent one army against another. I think that's where I would kind of go on that.
All right. So his next question, what are your thoughts on 3D printers and the board gaming world? You can use it to trick out your games with everything from trays to models and even terrain and missing pieces. However, I noticed on Board Game Geek there is a 3D terrain pack for Settlers of Catan, which means you could potentially print a game, download the rules, and not pay the creators a cent. Pirated games?
So I would say that probably not. If you had a 3D printer, which are in the hundreds of dollars, and then to maintain them also in the hundreds of dollars for printing and plastic and all that kind of stuff, you're probably spending more to print the game than you would to just go buy the game. Now, remember, like board games make money in mass production. A single one-off is not going to make you a lot of money. Now, in a lot of games are doing print and play. Like on Kickstarters, they will give you print and play, sometimes even before you back it, just saying, here's a print and play version. Print it out, cut it up, play it, do whatever you want with it. Here are the rules. And if you like it, come back and buy our version of the game.
Because if you like it, you're going to want the real deal with all the awesome, you know, components and everything. You're not going to want flimsy bits of paper for a game that you love. So it's such a good idea to do that model.
But I do like the idea of like the 3D printer tricking it out. Although in my mind, most 3D printed components don't trick out the game. It kind of makes it look kind of cheap because 3D printed components don't look that great right yet.
Right.
I don't know. I really like Hero Forge and I think that it's really fun. It's like part of my like creation of a character now. If I'm playing a role-playing game, is like going on Hero Forge and making my mini.
If I could make everything the quality of Hero Forge, yeah. I would completely agree.
Right.
But your home 3D printers are printing in a much, much less, a smaller, bigger resolution, more grainy
less,
resolution.
Less defined. A less detailed resolution.
Yeah. It's just not looking as good.
Yeah.
So I don't necessarily see 3D printers like replacing board games.
Well, not home 3D printers, but right. I do see 3D printing being very important in the board game industry with things like Hero Forge and being able to do much more kind of customized if you're willing to pay for it.
Yeah. Well, the Game Crafter was talking about basically their followers, they have a lot of people that follow them, about they want 3D printed components so they can put miniatures in their games. And JD just like, that's not going to be possible because you're going to be paying like $10 to $15 a mini if you want this thing. And that's even just at a rough resolution. And it's going to take a ton of time. So 3D printers still aren't up to that even minor consumer level on demand. Even Hero Forge, which is what they do, it takes 2 to 3 weeks to get a single miniature from them.
Yeah, I see it much more in the home consumer end, customizing your personal game, not on the production end.
Right.
Being fun stuff to have.
And he had one other question in here, which was basically Gruff, where can I find a copy? So we talked about Gruff on past shows. Gruff is you are a sheep herder fighting three insane sheep against three other insane sheep. And if you're looking for a copy of Gruff and you can't find it in the game store, you can find it at studiowoe.com. That's studio, S-T-U-D-I-O, woe, W-O-E.com.
Are you sure they're not goats?
They are goats. Yes.
Yeah.
Goat herders, crazy goats.
Yeah, like the Billy Goats Gruff.
Yes.
That's the connection there. Yeah.
Exactly. All right. Maybe we should go on topic now.
In this episode, we're talking about last-minute changes in plans. This could be within the game, changing strategy partway through, or before you even start playing by changing the game you play based on mood, players, or changing situations. This is very meta, Chris, because you actually changed the topic of today before it happened.
I did. So last week, I decided that we should do board game burnout for this episode. And then I'm like, that sounds really familiar. Have we done that before? So I started scrolling back.
That's hilarious.
I would like to point out that normally I'm more on top of this,
yep.
But that was an episode I was not on.
Ah, that makes sense.
You guys had Sydney on for that one, right? Because I was in Minnesota.
Yep.
Yeah. No, well, I mean, good thing you checked. I would not have even thought about it and just gone on and talked about it again.
Well, it was like 20 episodes ago.
That's true.
Like, it's crazy. We're on episode 67.
Yeah.
So, calling an audible. I use this phrase all the time.
Never heard it in my life until you just told me today.
Exactly. And a lot of people look at me and like, what does that mean? It's like, So I'm going to define this phrase.
Right.
And I don't really need to define it. Just kind of explain where it comes from. So it is football season in the U.S. and football being American football.
Football Sunday night.
Yes.
Right.
And calling an audible in football. So just to really go back to base, because a third of our listeners are not from the U.S. Right. And I probably guess that more than a third who are in the U.S. don't watch or care about football in any way, shape, or form. Sure. So just real briefly, football is a number of plays And during a play, the huddle is kind of something that is sort of iconic with football. You see the offensive and the defense huddling.
49, 46,
Sort of. That's after the huddle. Oh. So during the huddle, they're deciding what they're going to do. Okay. Now, the offense is typically deciding, we're going to run this particular play. And it's they practice these plays all the time. It's not like a spur of the moment. Okay, Joe, you go that way. Frank, you go that way. George, try to run down the middle and maybe I'll hand the ball to you. It's not like that. Right. It's like, you know, play X27 or whatever.
Eagle Alpha 1.
Yeah. Exactly, exactly. So now what the defense is trying to do is they're trying to set up so that they can guard against whatever the offense is trying to do. Then everyone lines up. The quarterback is looking and looks at the defense and, oh, crap. The defense knows what we're trying to do. I called a running play. The defense is all close to us. They're ready to defend against this running play. This is a problem. So what the quarterback will do is call an audible. Basically, what they're doing is at the line, just before the snap of the football, they're shouting out something that changes the play that they're going to do. So reacting to what the defense is.
So that's the blue 42 that you hear, you know, like that's what an audible is.
Sort of. Well, sort of. Oh. So they may call that. And it could be because the audibles are all coded as well. So it'll be something. But then the hike will come in and then it'll be blue 42, hut, hike. And until the ball is actually hiked, nobody can move on the line. Otherwise, there's all kinds of other penalties. Hmm. The football is really just a game about watching replays and penalties. But yes.
So I want a team to start naming all of their plays in German because I think that would be just so intimidating to be screaming German at the other side.
That's a great idea.
Right?
Yeah. I could offend a lot of Germans right now.
During Sunday football yesterday, and Spencer was just like not into it. He's like, whatever.
Yeah.
He was in a grumpy mood though.
Yeah. I could offend a bunch of German people by trying to make up German words, but I can't even.
No. And it wouldn't be as good.
Yeah, all I can do is like
Heischen. German is just such an intimidating language. Like, I think there's a video you can watch online where it like says all these words in other languages and then in German and it's all like butterfly and I highly recommend finding it. Because German, seriously, is just like the scariest and most intimidating sounding language, even when you're saying butterfly.
All right. Well, if you find the link, I'll put it in the notes.
Okay.
So I thought this was kind of interesting because, again, it was this whole last minute change of subject. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to call an audible on this topic. What am I going to switch it to? And I'm like, oh, wait, maybe this is an interesting subject.
Why not?
Full disclosure, it might not be.
Yeah. The worst episode we've ever done for all we know.
It could be. But I find in board games, I tend to do this a lot. And I'll actually use the phrase calling an audible. And a lot of times it can come with, if you have, we've talked about a number of these, touched on them in little bits. But if I say I'm inviting you guys over and, you know, Spencer's here and, you know, Amy shows up. Oh, we now have a fifth person. We were planning to play Pandemic Legacy, which is a four-person game, but now we have a fifth person, so we have a choice. We can say, we're not going to play any game, or we're going to say, hey, Amy, watch us play this game, or call an audible, play something else that plays five players. You know, maybe we pull out normal Pandemic with an expansion that allows us to put it. Is there a fifth player? I don't think so, but in any case.
I think maybe On the Brink or...
one of the variants.
Yeah, what's the other one? But they add more roles, and I think you can play up to five players. I know on the iPad you can play up to five players.
Well, then maybe that's something we do. So those types of things where you have a plan to do one thing, but then you have to change it for whatever reason. Not interesting at all?
Well, I mean, it happens. It definitely happens. I mean, you know, I talked about last week about the fact that I'm going to this board gaming party with people who haven't board game before, and they've got all these ideas about things they want to play, like XCOM, and it's like, well, no, you can't do that. Like, you have this idea in your head because you played the video game that XCOM is going to be great, but that's not a good idea. And you know, sometimes you just, you know, plan something with something in mind and then you're like, this isn't working. Let's switch it up. Let's do this instead.
Yeah. What about like, so say you started XCOM.
Right.
Which is a great example. Like they really have their heart set on XCOM.
Okay.
So you're like, all right, let's set it up. Let's download the app. Let's get going.
Yeah.
About 45 minutes into it, you look around the room and everyone's just like, I don't have any idea what's going on.
Yeah.
This is not what I expected. This is terrible. Like, when do you make that call to say, okay, let's just wipe this aside and replace it with something else before you lose their interest to want to play games.
It's tough. It's a tough one because I've actually been in that situation once before. I went around someone's house and they were into games and I was into games, but like at least two or three other people weren't. And it was quite a heavy game, like a co-op game. And basically, you could just sense about halfway through that like the other two or three people were just like, oh, yeah, when's this going to end? And we ended up like kind of plowing through, and that was the wrong decision. Like, we should have just called it at some point and been like, you know what, let's do something else, because you could just tell it was like pulling teeth for them. And then afterwards, like, one of my friends was, when we were leaving, was like, why did you keep asking questions? Like, I was just like pulling teeth, like, oh, I wanted you to stop so that we could stop playing the game. And I was like, oh. So you really got to read the room, I think. It's just like, gauge the people. It's like, have we got more than 50% of the people? If not, let's take a vote and try and scrap this.
I feel like you can tell a lot of times before you even start playing the game, like while you're telling people the rules.
Yeah,
like some people, I mean, to be fair, sometimes I might get this look, but it's usually because I'm reading the rule book while you're talking to me instead of actually listening to what you're saying. But if somebody's just like glazing over as you explain the rules, and it just gets like worse and worse the more you go into the game, maybe it's time to say, or we can pull out this other game.
Michael gave us a great list. Let's, you know,
right?
Notch this down to zombie dice and go from there.
It's a good idea. I think that is very true most of the time. I think the only time it's not true is if the person explaining the game is just particularly bad at it. It's like, this game is great once you get into it. Like, that person is just being really boring in the way that they're showing you how to play it. Like, let's do a, you know, a mock round, and that way you can learn instead of just like them reading you the rule book.
Yeah.
You know,
the other way you can tell is if more and more people start to take more and more frequent bathroom breaks.
Yes. If people are getting up and moving around, they're bored.
Need a snack. Yeah. Like, if you can't keep everyone at the table, it's
starting
time
conversations
to call it
that are not about the game, like all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and I think even while explaining the game, so you guys mentioned some good points. While you're teaching the game, sometimes you're going to realize like, okay, maybe let's switch to a different one. And then during the game, yeah. I don't think it's a bad thing to call a game. If there's a group of people and they're not having fun, just, hey, want to switch to something else.
The whole point is to be having fun. If you're not having fun, you know, what are we doing?
Yeah.
I think it's that sunk cost fallacy, isn't it? It's like, oh, but we've already done half the game or some of the game, and people are just like, oh, I don't want to be rude.
Economists will tell you what a terrible idea that is.
I agree. I completely agree.
Cut your losses, switch to a different thing.
Yeah.
And in theory, like if you got together to play a board game, you can just switch to a different game. Now, we play a lot of new games because I'm always bringing over new games. But if at any given point where it's like, okay, this game is just bad, I don't think I'd be afraid of just saying, okay, let's just stop this. And we've done that in a couple of cases. Terraforming Mars is the one that comes
first
to
Martian.
Most recently. Oh, wow. Or First Martian.
First Martian. We got like halfway through the little book and we were like, nope.
Yeah. And it's just like, let's just pack it up and we'll come back to it later, maybe when we're in the right mood, mindset. But otherwise, like, this is just not going to work. And we ended up switching to some other game.
I remember that was really fun.
Yeah.
I don't remember what it
was,
though.
Maybe Time Stories. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
It was Time Stories.
It was Time Stories, which is so much better.
Yep. Yeah. So not being afraid to switch, like just call that audible, say, all right, this isn't working. This is not what we expected. The defense is on defense now because, you know, nobody's paying any attention to this. Let's get out of here and do something else.
The only thing I think where your analogy breaks down here is that this is used in a team activity, and I feel like you're using it on a more individual.
I'm using it in a very generic way. I agree with you.
Okay.
I'm basically using it any time where it's like, this is what I thought was going to happen, like, and now something else needs to happen.
Making a split second decision.
Yep.
Making it based on what's going on. I guess I'll give it to you.
Yeah. Well, and then there's the issue of, all right, let's just plow through with the plan. You know, regardless of what we see, of what's going on, let's just go forward and see what happens. Oftentimes, you're going to end up hitting a brick wall.
Have you been watching the Bears play?
I watched them yesterday a little bit. That was a really pathetic game. But Josh is looking at me like, what?
Well, I do happen to know we all live in Chicago, so I happen to know that that is the terrible football team that is from here.
Yeah, they're pretty bad. Well, they were playing the number one rated team yesterday.
Yeah,
I hear they're bad anyway.
Yeah, they're pretty bad anyway.
But the Eagles just made them look like garbage. Got dragged around the field. It's terrible.
it was pretty bad. Man, we're gonna go to a lot of football. I really like football. It's my one sport that I actually like. So,
ooh,
what?
I have a good one this weekend. So we went to Thanksgiving with Spencer's family. So of course we played spades.
Nice.
Now I went nil twice. So spades is a trick taking game, and you say you are going to take no tricks during that hand. And that is a call that you have to make, like looking at your hand, deciding what you're going to bid. Are you going to do this? And you have to kind of read your partner a little bit. And it's really tough because you'll get busted for table talk if you ask them too much. But at the same time, you don't want to just be like, all right, I'm going nil. Because if you do it and your partner doesn't have the hand to support you, you can just lose your team 50 points.
Oh, interesting. So what kind of things could you say that you think won't get you busted for table talk in that situation?
Well, the easiest way is just if they happen to come before you in the bidding order, you can see what they bid. And that is usually pretty helpful. Gives you an
indication. Okay.
But normally I will say something like, so how you feeling? Or like, who dealt this hand? Or, you know, something along those lines of like, what, you know, like just trying to feel out like how everyone's looking at their cards.
So what would be then stepping over the line and be like, no, that's clearly, you can't say that.
How many hearts do you have? How many spades?
oh, that's,
or even just, I'm thinking of going nil. You can't say that.
Oh. Yeah.
Even how you're feeling would be table talk in a tournament setting.
Yes.
But in a more casual game, it's a little looser.
As the pregnant lady, being the only sober one at the table gave me a real advantage because nice. I feel like everyone else is a little like looser with information. I could kind of gather more just by being more alert than the rest of the table, especially towards the end of the night.
Nice.
So in that case, like calling that audible, and that's part of that game, is you get information that you don't necessarily have. And it's like you, if you were going to say nil and Spencer at the same time says nil, it's like, oh, maybe my hand isn't as bad as I thought it was. If he doesn't have anything and I don't have anything, you know, so new
or
information.
We were just going to lose to the other team because they have all the cards no matter what. Right.
That's interesting because it kind of brings to mind poker a bit, because obviously a lot of that is reading the people. And I guess, you know, this is kind of what you're saying in the space situation. It's kind of like reading the other person and then changing your play based on the new information and being like, okay, when we first started betting, they were acting in this manner. But then as soon as the fourth or fifth card came down, they've changed their behavior. Maybe I can't now bet the house because suddenly they're more confident. Stuff like that.
Yes.
Would that be the similar sort of thing?
Exactly. So say you're going through, we'll talk poker for a moment.
Right.
And we'll talk
Texas Hold'em.
Texas Hold'em. So there's a king on the board, or say there's two kings on the board, and you have an ace king in your hand.
Right.
So you have three kings.
You're killing it.
Yeah. You're set. And so your plan is to just take this all the way to the end.
Yeah.
So two kings on the board. Someone else could also have a king. You only know where your king is. All of a sudden, you know, it's two kings and two eights because an eight comes up. It's like, okay, I still probably have this.
But if somebody else has an eight and a king.
Right. Now they're
in a much better. Yeah.
So, and in that case, it actually have two, three of a kind. But the type of thing where it's like suddenly your plan doesn't feel as good anymore. So it's like, do I change what I'm doing or do I keep going with that original plan?
Right.
And sometimes, you know, someone may bluff you. It's like, oh, I have that eight in my hand. So now I do have this full house. And I'm over here, and I'm like, well, I have three kings. It's pretty good, but the way she's betting,
one eight,
so
can take me down.
Yeah, how do you? That's another twist of this: is how do you get someone to change their plan based on how you're acting within the game?
I like a game like that where it's kind of pretty obvious in terms of, well, it feels obvious in the sense of like what you do next, because some games, like something like what's that Eric Lang. Blood Rage. So like drafting games, like sometimes you're going for like a couple of different things, and then what other people are doing can really affect that. But there's like enough people on the board.
Yeah, Josh. And other people can really affect what happens in your game of Blood Rage.
Yeah, like when I completely destroyed you.
Twice.
Yeah, twice. In the same way. It was my fault the second
Kitty
time.
Kitty did not call the audible.
I didn't learn.
Yeah, it was an oversight on your part, and you'll never forget that one.
I won't. And it will never happen to me again. I will never let that troll get me.
And but that's it. Like, that part of why you forgot about it was so there's so many moving parts in a game like that you can kind of get confused and forget about things. And that's how I found myself playing in a lot of these types of games where they're real, like, I don't know, like point salad-y games or like, yeah, like these territory control things with lots of moving parts and lots of different things. And you've got to think, oh, what's Chris doing? I think he's trying to build an engine with those two cards. Oh, but I don't know. Now he's kind of changed his strategy and Kitty's changed her strategy. So wait, what do I do? And I've got four options in front of me of which card to pick. And it's just like, oh no, like there's so many options.
And this is why we have analysis paralysis on Josh's side.
You know, I was playing I was playing Pokemon, the card game with Sylvia, who's my Gloria's niece. Mm-hmm. And she was like, God, it took you that long just to put down one energy. And I was like, oh no. Even the 12-year-old niece is pulling me up for analysis paralysis.
Yep. Well, you just shouldn't take that long to put down one energy.
No, I shouldn't have. No. There were other options, I'm just saying.
Yeah, you don't know what he didn't put down.
Exactly. Yeah. But actually, you brought up engine building, and I think this is one of those places where this can hurt the most of just like sticking with your original plan and not paying attention to what's changing on the board, because you get set. It's like, I want to build this one engine. I want to make this thing work. I'm waiting for a particular card. I'm waiting for a particular move or access to a particular action. I'm waiting for something that will allow me to like complete this engine I'm working on. If you keep following that plan for too long, you're going to not get there. Maybe you will, maybe you won't, but you need to know when to say, okay, I'm changing it up. It's not working out as quickly as I need it to. I'm going to find a different strategy.
That's what always really gets me in those games. Like, it's just there's so many variables that often, as well, I have the opposite problem is not, you know, not sticking to the plan, but every new drafting round that comes around, I'm like, oh, but now I could do this other thing, you know, and almost abandoning each plan way too quickly is like the opposite end of that spectrum. And it's like, you really got to balance it. You kind of have at least some sort of engine that you're working towards, but then have maybe a side thing going where, like, I could abandon it and go for this.
You can't keep all your eggs in one basket.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah, that's true.
I think the flip side is really important to this, right? Because knowing when to change, that's fine. I'm going to change my strategy. And, you know, sometimes you just have to do that. Changing your strategy too much, though, or never picking a strategy, that can be even worse.
Because back to football, where this comes from, sometimes when you call an audible, you have to be very careful that the whole team hears you, knows it, knows what you're calling. Because sometimes if, you know, part of the team gets the memo and part of the team doesn't, you have not run a play. You have just made a mess.
Yes. So, which is what Josh does in his head.
Yeah.
Like, well, I could play this energy, but I could play this other energy. Man, I have two different energies. And, oh, what, this Pokemon here, and this is basic here. Oh, should I put that down? I don't know. That might be bad. Oh, she might do this.
Yeah. I know. There's just, that's why I like games with like more simplified rules, but with more complex strategy that comes from those simple rules. You know, a game like chess, you know, there's only so many rules and there's only so many things to think about.
And only so many choices you can make on the board in that moment.
Yeah, exactly. And then I can follow those choices down and then decide on a good one based on just a very set kind of list of variables. Whereas some of these games, there's just so many choices. I'm like, paralyzed, especially because we're always playing new games and that doesn't help either. I mean, I have AP anyway. I definitely, like, even on games that I've played a lot. But it makes it even worse when it's like my first time playing. I'm like, wait, what does that even do again? I don't know. You know, so it's tough.
So what games, a lot of games, especially for board games, what we've been talking about is games you make in the moment. You have a particular decision to make in the moment. Some of our engine building games, Scythe, for example, is a good example. Yeah. It is an engine building-esque game. You're making actions more optimal. So there's a little bit of player board manipulation. But also on the board itself, you're kind of spreading out. You want to gather resources. So there is a like kind of a long-term strategy there. Other games are like Risk. Would you consider risk a long-term strategy game? Or is that just, again, just in the moment, whatever the dice do, that's what I'm going to do? And is that why you like Risk better than other games? Because you don't have to have a long-term strategy for that.
I mean, Risk can evolve as you play it, but I just think there's less variables. Like, there is just less variables than a game like Scythe. Like, there's, and maybe I just haven't played Scythe enough, but it just feels like to me with Risk, it's simpler, the decisions I'm going to have to make. I don't know. What do you think, Kitty?
I think that it's just maybe that we're so familiar with the choices for Risk, they don't feel like choices at all, because there are really bad Risk strategies. You know the person who, you know, they don't have enough troops to make the push they're trying to make, and they're just spreading themselves thin across the board, and someone's going to come and wipe them out from behind. Like, you know that's not going to work, and we've seen it happen so many times that none of us would ever just march across the map leaving one guy behind in each country.
Right.
Unless we're winning. It's our final push, right. You know? So, I don't know.
I think that long-term strategies, I don't think Risk has a long-term strategy. And I know that people will disagree with me. I think Risk is about short-term strategies. It's also why I like Australia, because I can turtle up in Australia and move out. And you can call that a strategy, but ultimately what it's doing is, well, I'm making sure that I have this one area so I can get some extra troops each round. But ultimately, I'm just kind of building up so I can go and wipe out the board once I have enough troops.
You also want to make sure, though, that you're winning at least one battle every time, so you're getting a card.
Right.
And you want to, like, I think that is some strategy. And because if it's just not the only strategy.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely a strategy. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying there's no strategy in Risk. I'm saying that the long-term strategy is take over the board. Essentially, what you want to do is get enough troops so you can take over enough area and just kind of wipe people out. And that's really what everyone's trying to do. But I don't know that there's any place in that game where you can pivot and try a different way of doing
it. I think it's how you do it, you know? It's like, well, oh, I'm gonna make sure that no one gets Europe or Asia or whatever. And then, I don't know, maybe that goes to pot and you're just like, oh no, I can't do it that way anymore. I've got to kind of go through Africa now to do it because things have changed. Yeah, because things do change rapidly. So
sometimes you do get kicked out of Australia. Sometimes you can't have Australia and you got to go with South America. Sometimes somebody has South America and Australia and you're just struggling out there in the middle of the board. And I've seen people who don't have one of the hold up continents still win the game. It's a lot harder. And I do think that then you have to be more careful with your strategy. You've got to be more conscious of your moves, because I think that maybe Australia, South America are the easy strategies. They're the fast way. But you can win other ways.
So do you guys like games where... So Risk is one of those things, like, yes, there may be some changes in strategies and things here and there. But what about games... Do you like that need to invest in a particular strategy and, like, follow this through the end? Point salad games oftentimes do this, where you need to invest in certain categories of that point salad. And that is your strategy for winning the game. I want to get all of the cattle in Great Western Trail. So I'm going to focus on getting lots of good cattle, lots of spreading that out. I'm also going to focus on the train. So that's going to be my strategy. Oh, shoot. Josh got ahead of me in the train. So he's taking over all of these little areas that I was hoping to get points for. So now I have to pivot and go someplace else and try a different point strategy. Do you like those kind of games? Or are you more in the, I just want to not have to worry about a long-term strategy, just worry about in the moment and move forward?
So I really like games with asymmetrical starts, where it sort of gives you a direction to head and everyone has their own direction, so that you don't feel like somebody's stepping on your toes every time you... And then you need to, like, pivot four times, and because they got a little bit ahead of you, now you're super behind because you have to reinvent your strategy.
So like a Terraforming Mars, where you have a starting corporation which kind of gently guides you into a particular strategy.
Or even Scythe or Cry Havoc are both ones where, yep. Scythe, your player mat order and your race can kind of give you a direction. Or Cry Havoc really sets you on a particular path for each race.
Well, in Cry Havoc, if you don't follow that path, you will likely not win either, because each race has a very specific strategy. So Cry Havoc, We've talked about it a few times, but Cry Havoc has four different races, and each one plays very, very differently. One is territory control. One is fighting, essentially. One is just sort of turtling, but more resource gathering, and one is defense. So these four different factions are really kind of, you have to embrace what your faction needs to do in order to get points.
Yeah.
But at a certain point, you know, maybe you're the territory control and you're just not able to get a hold of territory. So you may have to say, okay, I need to go over and switch over to war. In Cry Havoc, that probably means you've lost the game because your faction isn't capable of making that strategy change.
Yeah.
So I definitely agree that Cry Havoc has a very specific strategy. I don't know if it has the capabilities of changing those strategies. I just think it's how well you execute on it.
But so maybe Terraforming Mars or Scythe Terraforming is a better, Mars, better example.
Yeah. Well, Terraforming Mars, I think, is a really good example because I'm waiting for specific cards to make my strategy work. I'm going the microbe route, and I'm going to collect all the microbe cards, but I'm not getting any microbe cards. And two turns go around, I just still don't have anything. At some point, I have to just be like, okay, I need to abort this strategy and go someplace else.
I don't know, but I feel like then you can blame the game and luck. Whereas with the Great Western Trail example, I'm blaming Chris or Josh, and that just doesn't feel as good.
Well, you should never blame me.
It's always your fault.
But it's probably just Josh taking too long.
I still haven't played the game.
I don't know why. I actually think you'd be okay at that one. Okay. Like I say, that game plays so fast.
It's also like you're making the decisions based on very limited choices at that exact moment.
Yeah, that's what I want.
So you don't have the
long-term view.
I mean, have a long-term view, but if you know what your long-term view is, you know which of three choices is going to further that.
Okay.
And you don't have to worry about which of 18 is going to further that or which of this turn and the next turn and the next turn and the next turn. Yeah. So
right. I think this entire episode could be about Great Western Trail, to be honest. Because there are so many things you can do and you can't do all of them, but you want to do all of them.
I don't even remember this game very well.
Oh my. All right, you guys, maybe we're not playing Pandemic tonight. Maybe we're playing Great Western Trail. We'll see.
We have to play Pandemic tonight. All
right, fine. We'll play Pandemic only because Great Western Trail is an hour away.
The shrink wrap. I have to play it now. I'm so excited. So,
Great Western Trail, essentially, there's a deck building element. So you're trying to get a lot of different cattle, different types of cattle, and then you're trying to build hands that have like no duplicate cattle, and that gives you the highest points.
Sounds like rummy-ish.
Well, if you wanted to have rummy, you just wanted nothing of the same. So really, you're looking for nothing of the same in your hand.
And when but you're only making straights?
Yes.
I guess. Sure. I don't know.
You may need to be building buildings, because when you build buildings, you get points. Yeah. You want to collect, there's three different types of workers in the game. There's engineers and cowboys, and I call them workers, but there's something else. They're the orange guys. They can take over train stations and run train stations and stuff. They also build things. You have like the TPs and the hazards you can collect. You have all the train stations you can take control of. You have all of the different cities you're trying to get cattle to. There's so many different ways of getting points. And there's like 11 or 13 different categories at the end of the game that you can get points. And you want to do them all.
That sounds like my nightmare.
But that's the weird thing about it, is it gently eases you into that because you can't do everything every turn.
Right.
But you do have this long-term strategy of what you're trying to do potentially.
Also, it feels like if you can't do one thing really well, at least you can do several things okay and not feel like you're out of the game.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I could probably handle that.
And there's also money involved.
Nice.
So you want to get money because money helps you get new cattle and other.
No wonder I don't remember after playing this game one time what it was all about.
Yeah, you guys disappoint me. See, this is why I only play games once or twice, because I can remember them. You guys need to play it multiple times so that I can talk to you about them more often.
I mean, to be fair, Josh hasn't played it at all. It's just me that you're chastising right now.
That's true.
Yeah. All right. Let's blame it on the baby.
All right, we'll blame it on the baby, and we will play this game again. Although once we crack open Pandemic Legacy, I have a feeling that that's will end up being what we're playing for the long haul. All right, so calling audibles. This is more just kind of like strategy in games, I think. Like, I think the entire, when you're playing a game, you're always making these micro changes and micro decisions.
Yeah, but like you said, there are some games that lend itself more to it than others. Like those games where you have a race and you have like an objective that's really built in and baked in, like you say, you can't change it as much in that game.
Yeah.
And I think the more random a game is, the less you can have a long-term strategy.
Yes.
So with a long-term strategy, you have opportunities to change your strategy. And if it's not as random, like, you know, the roll of a dice can change things or the draw of a card, then it's the other person doing something that can change what you really want to do. Yeah. I think that lends itself more to like, you know, all right, I need to mix things up, change this, work on a different strategy. I keep coming back to Homeworlds, like, oh, I had this perfect strategy going through, and then someone moved in and blew up that entire star, and now I have to change my entire strategy again, which is very similar. Well, actually, it's not similar. We call Homeworlds a space chess, but I think in that regard, it's so much different because chess never has the reset to it.
It doesn't have a reset. You can't, the board hasn't completely, but it does, you can, like, you know, your strategy can be ruined and you have to completely go for a different one.
Sure. But you can't really start over.
No, you can't start over in the way that you can in Homeworlds. Yeah.
So, yeah. I don't know. I think this is why we play board games, so we can make these micro decisions on the fly
strategy changes. I mean, that's what's key to being good at a lot of board games. Yeah. I mean, not all of them, like you say, some are more random, but you know, that's part of the fun of it. Like, oh, okay, it's changed. Like, we have to, you know, evolve our strategy now. And I mean, Pandemic is the legacy, is the perfect example. I mean, we played that game, and honestly, it's the most fun I've had playing a board game. And I read a headline, and it was like a review of Pandemic Legacy 2. And it was like, the best game in the world just gets better. And I'm so hyped for it for exactly that reason, because you're constantly evolving your play as new things come out. You're like, oh no, we can't do things the way we did it in the last round. We've got to change our strategy. Yeah. It's really fun.
Yeah. And it really does. It throws the change in lineup at you. Like, it will give you these changes mid-game. Like, oh, stop and open the envelope. Like, it's going to change everything. Well, you need to make those decisions on the fly.
Well, I think it even goes beyond. I mean, Pandemic Legacy, yes, it captures all of these things. But I think, like a traditional board gamer, you have to embrace this concept of being able to react to change to enjoy board games. Because that's what it does. Like, board games force you to react to change all the time. Yeah. Especially in the co-ops, where a lot of that change is random and just thrown at you and you just have to react to it. If you don't enjoy making those split decisions, split changes and plans, you're probably not going to enjoy board games. If you're the type of person that says, I want to create a plan and I'm just going to follow this plan through to the end, no matter what.
No matter how many trolls come out and kill all my men.
Exactly. You're not going to want to play that game. You're not going to enjoy board games. So. Yeah. I think what we've done is kind of gone full circle into saying, calling an audible, that's just part and parcel to enjoying tabletop gaming in general. Just, you need to always be ready to change your mind and change your strategy. And if you enjoy that challenge, then you are going to enjoy board games. So I think we've done enough game-changing talk. thank everyone for getting this far. Like I say, this wasn't the most focused episode, but I've learned something from it, and I like it. So hopefully you guys learned something too. I checked iTunes reviews. There's one new review I want to give a shout-out for. It's Ndiagi G.
Awesome name. Said
really nice things. He's at the time he posted this, which was a couple weeks ago, he was up to episode, he or she, was up to episode 10 and moving forward. So that always, I love it when people start from the beginning and move forward. So I should go back and do that. Everyone, thank you for reviewing. If you've reviewed us in the past, if you haven't reviewed us and you want to, it's easier than ever on iOS 11, apparently. You just click it. And when you're looking at the podcast app, click the episode, and then it's just boom, right there. You can rate us. So if you want to throw us a rating or a review our way, we love reviews. Also, if you want to support us through Patreon, you can visit us at our Patreon site at tabletopgametalk.com/Patreon, Patreon. If you're a patron, you get automatically entered in all of our giveaways, which for December is Pandemic Legacy. You also get bonus entries based on your level. You can also just enter by emailing us, of course. And I think, oh, you should follow us. Follow us on Facebook at Tabletop Game Talk Podcast or at Twitter at Tabletop Game TLK. Or you can follow me at Game Master Chris. And we have an Instagram out there, Tabletop Game Talk.
Yep.
And the rest of it, I think, Josh, you should probably save my voice because if you can't tell, I'm trying not to cough.
Indeed. Well, thanks for listening. And remember, we love your feedback. So email us with comments and questions at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. Finally, a huge thank you to our patrons. Emil Geeljam, George, Adam Harrison, Sam from New York, Jason Strong, Terence Miltner, Stephen Seitz, Alex Brown, Michael Oll, Josh Arntz, Trevor Olson, Brian Arnold, Sean P. Kelly, John Merkel, Daniel Shepard, C. Marie, Rudy Liu, Benjamin Heimowitz, Jerry Huang, Mike Smith, Stefan, Bueller, Phillips, Caleb O'Brien, John Lewis, Jennifer Engelbrecht, Justin Willard, Christopher Dong, Jason Marks, Jeremy Fisher, Carl Hammond, David Radke, Lance Morgan, Nick Quickstra, David Sellers, Jason Rodney, and Michael Yanikowski. Until next week, when we talk about good games under $20, keep playing games and having fun.
Good night. All right, so Spencer's here in 3 minutes. Can we get the game set up in 3 minutes?
Mostly.
I really should have done this episode in a hazmat. I'm pretty sure you guys are going to get me sick.
Yeah, that's just going to have to happen.